Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast with Tim Elmore. I am Andrew McPeak, your host. We are very excited to be here. Are we not, Tim?
We are, and I'm extra excited because, well, you know, as a diabetic, I need a little help, and so I've got my Welch's fruit snacks right next to me. I'll never go low.
Prepare yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. You may or may not hear rustling of plastic containers of fruit snacks here in the near future. We're also excited because we're changing things up on the podcast today, and I think it's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to our conversation. And when I started thinking this week about some things that we should talk about, I started traveling down memory lane. I don't know if this ever happens to you, Tim. I started thinking about times in my life, especially my childhood, where I just was hit with a sudden change. Do you have memories like that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, probably the biggest change our family went through, I was 15 years old, and my dad and mom decided to move us from Cincinnati, Ohio to San Diego, California.
So no small move there.
No small move. Different climate, different culture, completely different new set of friends and so forth. And that was, whoa, hey.
And you said you were 15?
15 years old. But here's what's kind of fun. This just came to me. So we send the movers, these professional allied moving van people, off to, you know, the West. And we took off a day or two later. But for some reason, halfway across the country, we meet up with them. We met up with our van line people. I guess we're eating.
They were like stopping for a cheeseburger or something.
Yeah. And so because we're young, my sisters and I, they said, hey, climb in the cab with us. So mom and dad followed. We're in the cool cab with a CB radio. Remember those CB radios?
Yeah.
And we were riding high, literally high.
Enjoying yourself.
We were thinking we're pretty cool.
Yeah. So you spent half the time riding with your family, the other half traveling across the country.
With strangers. Yes, minors. Yeah.
It was a different time, Tim, a different time.
How about you, Andrew?
I started laughing because I thought of two moments. There was one moment, I think I was probably 8 or 9, and we lived in this small house when I was a kid, and I walked into my parents' room, and their bathroom was just to the left. And so I walked in, I turned to the left, and all of a sudden, there's a strange man there. So let me provide context.
Okay, yes,
my dad, up until this point, my entire life, had a mustache. And he made the decision that day for whatever reason. I don't know if he cut himself shaving or what it was, but he decided it's gone today, not telling any of us kids. And I literally, yelled out when I turned and saw my dad, and all of a sudden, who is this strange man who's missing his mustache? I thought of another time too. This was so funny. When I was a kid, probably again 8, 9, 10, something like that, I was with my mom and we were in a Blockbuster video store.
Yeah, remember those?
You may or may not remember those. but we spent some time finding the right video we were going to get, and then we went up to the counter to check out, and we were met with a surprise. The surprise was we owed a lot of money in late fees to Blockbuster.
Because you forgot to turn a video in.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm with my mom, and my mom gets immediately frustrated, and she, as we're walking out, says, your dad forgot to turn in this video, you know? And so we got in the car, and she's just livid, just absolutely livid, you know, mostly probably because she was embarrassed when she went up to the counter. And so as a kid, I'm sitting in the back, and I just start crying. And she's like, what's wrong? And I said, are you guys going to get a divorce?
Over a late video.
That's right. That's kid logic right there.
No, but it's true. When you first hear mom and dad doing that, or at least the first in memory, you think, oh my gosh, is this it?
Yeah.
But you know what? You just triggered a memory for me now. The late video reminds me, you remember Reed Hastings' story? Reed finds this, I think it was Apollo 13 on a VHS tape that he had, turned it back into Blockbuster, realized he had a very, very large late fee. And that's what triggered him to come up with Netflix.
No joke.
And so he goes back to Blockbuster and actually offers, hey, could we partner together? I think I've got this new way to, you know, to get videos to customers and later to stream it. He actually had the idea we could put this where it's all electronic. And of course, Blockbuster thought that's a stupid idea. And now Reed Hastings is smiling as he walks to the bank. And I don't know if I've seen a Blockbuster store lately.
There aren't very many.
But isn't that really our topic of the day? It's change. And how do we manage change and handle change when it's coming so fast at us or sometimes from us?
Yeah, this is something that we think a lot about because change is kind of a regular part of life, especially if you work with the next generation, right?
Yeah.
So what's really interesting to me, though, is that change is it's foreign and it's difficult to deal with unless it's really good change. And if you can acknowledge that, you know. But one of the things I find is that we try and institute what we believe is going to be good change into everyone around us.
Yeah.
It just looks like bad change. I was, you know, working and thinking about this, and I came across some news articles that were really funny that showed me how much change happens in our world, and people are just forced to deal with brand new realities. So this one, these are all from this summer. They're really, really funny. Okay, so this first one, this is outside of Oregon, in Depot Bay, Oregon, okay? There was a truck carrying 7,500 pounds of what's called hagfish, but we would know them as slime eels is what they're referring to.
I would know them as slime eels?
Well, you may or may not know them as slime eels, but you've heard of an eel before, of course.
Okay, so this is in Oregon. Go ahead.
So this truck is carrying all of these eels, tips over and falls over on the interstate, and 7,500 pounds of eels are thrown out onto the highway. So if you can imagine being a driver, you're driving along, and all of a sudden you come up on eels, and you have to look up these photos. This is the grossest thing you might have ever seen of these eels. This is a specific kind of eel that when it gets stressed out, it releases more slime.
Secrete slime.
This
is a new version of slip and slide.
That's exactly right. Okay. And I would say those people were met with a surprise as they drove up.
No doubt about
it. We can't always choose our changes. I read about another change. This one is really very precious. There was a family. They were fostering two kids, 12 and 10, a brother and sister. Yeah. And they took them to Disney World, and they had a surprise for them at Disney World. They took them behind the scenes, and they got to meet Mickey Mouse himself.
Oh, that's fun.
And they got their photos taken, and then Mickey Mouse brings out this, and the video is awesome. You got to look this up. But he brings out this sign that says, "Congratulations, it's your adoption day." And they find out right there that them two have been adopted. Their reality shifts in a moment, and all of a sudden they're faced with this new reality, which is something they've been wanting for a long time. It's really beautiful.
So a minute ago, I thought Disney World was kind of cool, and now I'm thinking I just got a permanent home. That's so fun.
Yeah. So there's all different kinds of change. I came across another one that I think is the picture that many of our listeners face, which is negative change. When something shifts out from under you, and all of a sudden you have to deal with this reality. This was a school. I won't say where, but they cut $15 million from their school district and from their charter schools. Mm. And then the teachers, they cut that over the summer. The teachers come back to school, basically they're charged with figuring out where they're going to cut, you know, $15 million.
Yeah.
So if you can imagine, you got this job where you're giving your heart and soul, and all of a sudden you're faced with the reality of I've got to figure out where to cut my budget. You know, my budget is probably already tight, and now I've got to cut it.
Yeah.
I just think, man, when we face changes, there's all different ways we can approach it, but it worries me, you know. How are we going to be ready for change that we face?
Well, this last example you gave really is where we need to jump off and talk about the subject very practically, Andrew.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Our listeners deal with mostly change that's imposed from someone else. Not all of us are top level. In fact, most of us are not top level leaders that make unilateral decisions about schools or youth groups or boys and girls clubs or colleges or athletic teams.
Yeah.
I am thinking now, when you were mentioning that, about a school principal over a large high school that decided to partner with us, and he wanted to do these Habitudes images once a week, you know, with his school, his student body.
Yeah, yeah.
And really begin to build leadership and character through the power of images and conversations. But he made the decision, he didn't get the buy-in he needed. So he's making a very good decision.
Yeah.
But without the proper preparation of faculty and staff and so forth, we work with him to set it all up, but somehow the proper buy-in with the right people wasn't made. And it just kind of fizzled.
So
I don't think it wasn't the fault of any one person, but they hadn't been prepared for the change.
So the principal comes and says, "We're going to make this change." And the teachers and the staff just say, "No, you're not. We're not going along with that."
Yeah, right. So anyway, this is part of the frustration that I think lies behind change. I have worked for leaders before. I've been in my career now 38 years.
Yeah.
Who issued changes down from the top. They were not bad decisions, but the preparation was missing. John Maxwell used to always talk to me about, you know, the right decision at the wrong time is an acceptance, wrong decision at the right time. You know, there's different equations. Sometimes it can be a very good decision, but not timed right. It's as though it were a bad decision.
Will you say that again? Because I think that's so important for us to understand as we're talking about this issue.
Sometimes we as leaders can make a very good decision, a right decision, but when it's made at the wrong time or without the right preparation, it will be as bad as a bad decision.
That's so huge for us to remember.
Yeah. So we've all had changes forced on us that we weren't ready for, frustrating, et cetera, et cetera. So really today, Andrew, I think you've mentioned this to me. You kind of set this whole thing up. We want to talk about this. How do we do it well? How do we make the change right, whether we're on the receiving or the giving end?
Yeah, and we started talking about this. What are the true mental steps that people need to go through in order to be prepared for change? Really, I know you've been talking about this for years. I really started this journey of understanding this concept with you really about a year ago as we were working on the Marching Off the Mat book. And I remember we went back and forth and decided, you know what, there's a hole in the concept that we have for the book, and we really need to address what do you do when you see all the change that needs to happen, but you don't know exactly how to implement it, or you don't know what steps you need to take in order to get people on board with what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So listeners, just to be clear here, part of this Marching Off the Mat book, and this is not just a shameless promotion here, but we really try to get practical. If you have been inspired, let's say, by the Marching Off the Mat content or whatever you were inspired to do, there's some certain steps you're going to need to take that are not going to allow, they're going to allow you to make the change over time, but not overnight. But it's the right steps you need to take to make sure they're successful and lasting.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, as I look back over that whole process of us, you know, writing that book together, I really think of this chapter, we called it Trouble Back Home, as maybe like the hidden gem in the book, because the stuff here is so practical, so helpful. So we're about to talk, I think, about maybe one of the most helpful lists in the whole book, which is how do you influence people as you're working towards change? We really only have time to talk about five of these, but I know the list had 10. And in fact, there's so much more content in the book. And if people want to, if you're interested, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, man, this sounds great, I wonder what the other five are, I really encourage you, check out Marching Off the Map, go to marchingoffthemap.com and pick that up. But Tim, walk us through these.
Okay. Step one, if again, you're the person with this new great idea, step one would be to summarize your idea or ideas, meaning collect your thoughts. You don't want to go to anybody with a change idea and you're still kind of fuzzy or you know, where you're not going to be clear with them.
Yeah.
So summarize the improvement you'd like to make, the pain you'd like to resolve. For example, let me give you an example. As you list the ideas you want to implement, jot down beside each one the pain point it addresses. So every step you plan to take should solve a problem. Most people don't like change for change's sake. Any change you should improve a situation. That's the point I'm trying to make here. So as you write down the list of changes, here's exactly why I'm thinking this might be important. This is going to solve a problem, cure a disease of some sort in our organization. And I would say, as you jot down the summary, consider your listener's perspective. This is always wise.
Yeah.
What may be their objections or struggles with your ideas? Be ready to address them logically. Clarify the big wins that could happen if you make such a move. This will force you to take measures to make sure the ideas really are better than your current reality. And we've all made changes where you go, this is no better than it was.
Yeah. Or really, like, I mean, I know plenty of times where I've come to people and said, there's something wrong here. And they go, what's wrong? And it's like, I haven't taken the time to sit down and write out. These are the actual problems. And this is what I actually think we need to do to solve those.
So here's a big deal. A number of years ago, I learned that people change for one of two reasons, pain or gain. So think about this. You want to address both these motivators, if you can, when you're making a change. Pain, meaning what is the pain people resolve if they make this change? So you want to be very clear on that. If we make this change, we're going to get rid of this pain. Most people go, yay. And then gain is what's the benefit people will receive if they do make the change? If I've got a good case, like a good attorney, if I got a good case on both of those, things are probably going to go well.
Yeah. So talk us through, I mean, do you have any examples? What does this look like practically, or anybody that you could point to that you would say is a good example of somebody who did this well?
I think so. We live in Atlanta, Georgia, as you well know, Andrew.
Mm-hmm. I do.
The Ron Clark Academy is here, and he is just an incredible educator, has been for years. Years and years and years ago, he won the McDonald's Teacher of the Year Award and has written a book. Actually, he's written a few books, but 55 Rules, you know, that your kids need to know. He moved from his fairly safe haven in North Carolina teaching to teaching up in New York, and not just New York City, Harlem.
That's a big change.
Yeah, it was a big change. And as he began to realize, I've got to change the way I teach up here to these kids, some of which are at risk, some of which are in crises, kids, minority groups, most of them, he realized, I got to build a case for this because I'm about to use rap music to teach history, you know, or algebra or whatever. So he puts this case together and really sold them. And of course, the rest is history. He ended up setting up an entire school back down south, but based off these principles he learned and proved to the rest of the faculty and the administration up there in New York.
Yeah, and I would say the Ron Clark Academy is legendary.
Yeah.
Maybe all over the world, but definitely in this region, everybody points to them. Okay, so that's number one. Summarize your ideas. Tim, what's number two?
Number two is scout the land. So number one is summarize your ideas. When I say scout the land, here's what I mean. So you've got your list of ideas. Before broaching the subject of making changes, begin meeting with your supervisor, asking if they feel the same pain, let's say, and inquire if they believe what they believe could be done about it. So you may want to set up a breakfast or a coffee, and you just say, are you seeing this too? You want to make sure you're not coming across as a complainer.
Yeah, you're asking, not telling, sort of.
That's right, exactly. So ask how you can help if they do feel like they see it. This kind of relationship cultivation is vital. In fact, without the relationship, I don't know if you've got the right or the pocket change, if you will, to use to do it. One of the phrases, Andrew, you know we've used for years here is, we've got to build bridges of relationship that can bear the weight of truth. So if you've got to do a truth-telling time on what's not right, you better make sure you've earned the heart change. The relationship is built, and you've got every right to do it.
That feels like one of the number one principles of leadership in general, but especially if you're going to make change, you have to earn that right.
That's right. So here's a pithy statement. To make change, you got to put change in your pocket. You may want to write that down and tweet it.
Okay? I'm going to right now,
All right. So I'm sorry. This is all unscripted. You earn the right to make suggestions by first listening and empathizing. That's really what I'm trying to say, processing the pain that your supervisor or decision maker is experiencing. And taking time to converse about the important issues without an apparent agenda just builds credibility. This step works for, it kind of works like a bank account. You make investments by listening. So money's in the bank, and now you're ready to make a withdrawal if you've got some idea of your own.
Yeah. This, oftentimes when I hear really good ideas, the first thing I think of is how I've done that terribly in the past. This actually, it really makes me think, my first job ever, I was leading a conference, and we had this really great program that had been developed by my predecessor who really knew what they were doing. And I hadn't really gotten my experience writing or anything like that, but I had one of our partners call us one time and they said, so, hey, year one was great. You guys came, you did a great job at the conference. What does year two look like? And I was intrigued. I thought, that's a fantastic question. That's a question we need an answer to. And the first thing I decided to do was, I've got a summer coming up with a little more time. I'm going to get writing.
Yeah.
And I spent all summer developing what I envisioned year two looking like.
It was fantastic.
It was amazing. Yeah, as long as it was just me in my office, it was the best thing that had ever been made. And I can genuinely say there might have been two people who were willing to pay for that conference.
Yeah.
Because I think what I didn't do was exactly this, scout the land.
Yeah.
I didn't call anybody else and say, hey, are you interested in a year two? What would year two look like to you? What do you think your students really needed after we came and left? And without scouting the land, you'll find that you do a lot of work for no gain whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I just feel like this is such a huge principle to remember.
I agree.
All right. So let's keep moving. Number three, tell us about this one.
Yeah, this is so important. Maybe you've heard this phrase before, listeners, but number three is shoot bullets before cannonballs. I'm talking about figures of speech here, Andrew. Jim Collins, the author, Good to Great.
Love him.
And other books, talked to us about this idea when trying anything new. Early American militia first shot bullets to discover exactly where a target was, a ship or whatever they were trying to hit. And once they hit it with bullets, a less expensive weapon or ammunition, then they shoot the cannonball, which cost a lot more money. I think this is such a great rule of thumb. Start small at first and try things out in a pilot or beta sort of way. We've learned this at Growing Leaders. We do this all the time. So I'm suggesting, listeners, if you see a change that needs to be made, you scout the land, launch small pilot projects using the ideas. And I would even say, in fact, it might be wise to involve only a smaller group of students or staff if you're making a change with them to prepare to collect the data after the pilot is finished. Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith, who I consider a friend, we've been up at Ohio State for quite a while now, but Gene has a little sign in his room that says, you have to go slow to go fast. I love that. Counterintuitive. Yeah. I'm going to say it again. You have to go slow to go fast. Meaning, at the very beginning, get your ducks in a row. Get your eggs in the right basket and make sure you got it right. And then you can speed up. But boy, if you run out of the gate at full speed ahead, good luck with that. You're going to run over people and it's not going to be a pretty picture.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that anybody who's initiated change knows that this is so important. And we run into this all the time. You know, as I'm helping our partners initiate Habitudes, I'll have conversations all the time where somebody will say, we really want to do this, but I don't know if anybody at my school wants to do it. And I'll say, why don't you just do it?
It's
cheaper. It's much easier to implement something that's smaller, but take really good notes and take really good assessments, surveys.
Yeah.
And then you've got something the next year to take to a supervisor or a peer and say, listen, we tried this out. These were the results. Yeah. I think maybe we should expand this a little bit.
You're right. Well, Andrew, we actually don't do anything big here now without practicing this step. We've learned. So I'll never forget years ago, we were launching this Life-Giving Mentors video series, which I was very excited about. We had incredible people lined up to speak on it, John Maxwell and Miles McPherson, Andy Stanley and others. And we just shot short ones at first and tested it out.
Interesting.
And it was not hard to do because we ended up using them later with a larger project, but it sure let people taste a bite of the ice cream before they buy the whole scoop, you know, that if you know what I'm talking about. It just saved us over and over and over the years to scout the land and then shoot bullets before cannonballs.
It's genuinely, it sounds so simple, but I think this is an inspired idea.
Yeah.
If we'll practice it. Okay, so number one was summarize your ideas. Number two, scout the land. Number three, we just talked about shoot bullets before cannonballs. Number four, show and tell. Tell us about it.
Show and tell is a really big step, only because each of us as human beings can only be so convincing with our words.
Yeah.
Okay, I like words. You know that. And so do you, I might add.
I talk a little bit.
Yes. So by show and tell, here's what I mean. Let others not only see the data, but observe the change in action. For instance, if you're a teacher, let's say, invite your administrator into your classroom to observe your new methods or pedagogy. If you're a coach, invite your athletic director to watch practice. If you're a university staff member, invite your dean to see your work. This all makes sense, I think. But you have to let people, when people see something, they suddenly have an experience. They're not just listening to a talking head.
Yeah.
So I would say if you're a manager, invite your supervisor to view how you're achieving the results with your young team members. Every context this works. And I say this because I've learned that while good data is intellectually convincing, observing a change in person convinces the heart. You want to sell your leader both mentally and emotionally on any change. And by the way, Andrew, isn't it true? We are really emotional creatures. We don't like to admit it. We think we're logical. I get emotional about stuff that matters. And if I can see something change the life of a young person, a student, holy smokes, I'm really ready to not only buy in, but to bet the farm.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I think, I mean, neither you or I would call ourselves scientists, right?
I
think we've seen enough of people who, even the data-driven folks, run. Honestly, there's some sort of emotional capacity or some sort of emotional foundation behind the decisions that they make, the things that they care about. And you're absolutely right. If we'll do this well, I think it'll make the biggest difference.
Well, it's, you know what it is? This is the difference between hearing a news story and being an eyewitness.
Yeah.
You know, if I saw what was on the 6 o'clock news, but I saw it, I've got way more emotions involved here.
Yeah.
So you're simply saying it before you make the change, listeners, let people see what's going on. And by the way, if there's not much to see, don't show them yet. You know, make sure there's
keep
something
working
to see.
On it. Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good.
This just came to me, Andrew, and I think it's a great, vivid illustration of what I'm talking about. One fellow Atlantan that lives in this city with us is Sarah Blakely. If you have heard the name Sarah Blakely, it's probably because of Spanx. When Sarah first came up with this idea, she goes directly to Neiman Marcus, this amazing department store.
Yeah.
Goes to headquarters and says, I'm not leaving until I talk to a representative about my product. Well, they have hundreds of people that do this, but finally someone gave her 10 minutes. She went in, she started this little talk she had developed on this pitch, like an attorney, and she could tell this pitch was not going anywhere. So she stood up, motioned for this fellow female representative to come with her. She takes this rep into the restroom, and she tries on the Spanx. Sold!
Truest show and tell I've ever heard.
That's right. And of course she gets it. Now, here's what's really cool about the story. You know, months later, Sarah's talking to, people in the industry, and they go, how did you get to go to a trade show and get somebody's attention from a trade show? She said, I never even knew there was a trade show. She just knew, I got to go show somebody, and if I do that, the product sold.
She didn't know the industry, she knew the way to pitch it. Like, you've got to see this to believe
that's
it,
right,
sort of.
Rookie smarts. Yeah.
Rookie smarts. Love it. Okay, let's move on to the last one. Yeah. Go for it.
The fifth one we're going to cover here in this podcast, thanks for hanging with us. I'm trusting you are still hanging with us, is secure a critical mass. Now, you know this principle intuitively, but I think we need to say it out loud because I think we forget it in our passion to make change fast. Keep in mind that most significant changes happen over time, not overnight. Be patient and work toward accomplishing critical mass. And by this, I mean growing the percentage of people in your organization or your school who buy into the idea you're proposing until you have a large enough ratio to gain traction with a majority. So now it's different in every place. It might be just 10 people you need, but it was 10 loud people, you know?
That's basically right.
But it might be more than that. So critical mass is not a specific, it's got to be 2%, 10%, 50%. But it has to be enough that now this is the buzz. We're talking about this. And enough people have seen this that now it's unpaid advertising is what it is for your new idea.
Mm.
So often positive improvements can be made with only a fraction of a whole population if they buy in with passion. So that's what you want. As your little movement, quote unquote, if I might say, grows, choose markers along the way where you can measure growth and improvement. Like an example, this might be, if you're trying to change the pedagogy or the style of delivery of content in a classroom, keep track of every 5 instructors who make the shift to the new style and mark it down somewhere. And then check in with this group in an ongoing way just to maintain the momentum. I think if you do that, the critical mass truly does become eventually a majority. And that's what you need to begin to swing the pendulum to the other side of the clock.
I love that. I feel like we're thinking so practically, right? When we think about change, we just think we like let the urgency of the need for the change just sort of overwhelm us.
Yes.
But I think what you're talking about is the absolute best practical way to approach this, thinking about strategically who are the people that I need to get on board, the people I need to show and tell to in order to get this whole organization, this whole school, this whole team, this whole department along with me with this idea.
So I believe some people that I truly respect have done this brilliantly. Years ago, Growing Leaders, our organization, started a partnership with Virginia Tech. So we're now working with different departments, but the very first department we worked with at Virginia Tech was the athletic department.
Okay.
So there was John Jadon and Danny White and others up there that we built a friendship with. But they got all the habitudes right up front. I mean, they bought the whole kit and caboodle, you know, just all 9 yards. No pun intended.
Yeah.
And then we began to talk, and it became a very mutual, wise choice to just start with a team or two.
Mm.
Rather than all 15, 20 teams, let's just do a few.
It was too overwhelming to get hit with all that at once.
Well, even though selfishly, I thought, oh, no, do it, everybody. I thought, this is right. And it was so right.
Yeah.
There was a couple of teams, I don't know, women's soccer and so forth and so. They had a few teams. It went really well because they focused on a few. Well, once they got critical mass, It became the buzz. And guess what? Other coaches start coming to the teaching team who were doing the Habitudes in that department. And they said, can you do it with us too? At men's tennis and basketball and this and that. Well, pretty soon, I don't know if it's pretty soon, over time, they had enough teams that it was the deal. But it was them going slow first and really getting a critical mass to buy in.
What I love about that is the change that you're initiating there. So if you do it first, right, and you get it right, and you got a couple of groups doing it correctly, you see results. Then when other people come along and they try it, they know this works. I've just got to figure out how to do it well. Yeah. So there's a little bit of proof that's there all along the way. Yeah. People can't just look at what you're doing and say, well, that'll never work, because it clearly is working, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And because you got that critical mass first, it makes all the difference.
Yeah, so. No doubt. So let me I can see our clock is – I see what the clock is telling us.
Okay.
It's telling us to get done. Let me close with a really cool sort of parable or fable. It's such a great picture, Andrew, of what we've talked about here, the five steps of starting small and getting buy-in and letting people make a contribution and so forth. Do you remember, Andrew, you probably heard this when you were a kid. It's the story of Stone Soup.
I think I have. Yeah.
It's a fable, but it very quickly, it's the story of a very hungry peasant man who walked into a village. And he was just hungry. He needed food. And so he went from one neighbor to another, knocking on doors and asking for food. And nobody wanted to help. They wanted to hold on to what they had.
Yeah.
And he thought, I know they're people of means. I'm looking at their houses. They've got something. But he thought, instead of arguing with them at the doorstep, I'll do something different. And that's when he invented stone soup. Here's what he did. He got a big stone out in some field, you know, and he put it in this big kettle out in the middle of the square, where everybody could see it. And he filled it with water, and then he dropped the stone in. He called everybody out. Said, I just put a stone in this. I'm making stone soup. You guys, this stuff tastes great. And so he put a spoon in, tasted it. It's okay, but it's not great yet. Huh? You try it. You taste it. And people, that tastes like a rock and some water.
Exactly what it is.
I know what it needs. It needs some carrots. Does anybody have any carrots? Oh, I got carrots, and so somebody runs and gets carrots.
Well, guy who closed the door on him
before.
That's
right, exactly. I think it needs potatoes. I think it needs roast beef. I think it needs onions. I think it needs... So pretty soon, it's stone soup, but it's loaded with lots of goodies, and people have bought in. And over time, they had a great kettle of soup that fed everyone. This is what we want. Change should feed everybody. Change should affect all of us in a positive way. And even though that's kind of a cheeky little story, it's such a picture of how change happens over time.
It really is. And we want to encourage people who are listening, you guys, you have the power to change things, even if you don't find yourself being at the top, right, of the organization that you're in. But we really believe that you have the authority and the ability to create change. It just might start small, and that's okay, right? It's like stone soup. So, Tim, thanks so much. I feel like this was a fantastic conversation. I hope that you, as you're listening, are enjoying sort of the way that we're doing this podcast. We're really excited about it. We also want to start listening to you even better than we've been doing so far. And so we're introducing, Tim, a brand new email. It's like email that's been around since 95.
But let me give you a drum roll. Okay.
Ready, ladies and gentlemen. podcast@growingleaders.com.
That's right. Okay.
It's shocking everyone, right? What
is
the name of this thing is.
We're on the cutting edge.
So this is what we want. We want for you to be able to talk back to us, to give us your comments, your suggestions. If there's something you're really dealing with and you want us to talk about it, if you've got a suggestion for somebody we should interview, we want you to provide that feedback to us. So all you would do is email podcast@growingleaders.com. Yeah. We're listening. We're excited about talking back and about making some changes to the podcast. Has to really connect with you all, because you guys are the heroes. So.
And you may want to say, here's another subject I want you to talk about. So it might just
exactly.
not be a question you have on a current podcast. Here's the subject I really want to hear about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
So one last concept, one last idea, marching off the map. It is still new, and I know we keep talking about it, but we talk about it because we believe in it. We spent a long time making it, I think, helpful and really, really practical. So if you want a compass that can get you to the changes we need to make in leading students well, we believe marching off the map is the resource that you need. So you can find that at marchingoffthemap.com. You'll discover the latest research on the next generation, practical leadership solutions and real life examples of leaders who are paving the way as they make changes, the exact sort of situations that all of us face day in and day out. So we hope you'll check that out. Tim, as always, it's an honor always sitting across from you and having these conversations. We'll see you guys next time.